The Be Rad podcast is brought to you by MoFo, male optimization formula with organs to boost testosterone. Brad's macadamia masterpiece, mind-blowing nut butter blend, now offered on Amazon. Chili Technology, temperature-controlled mattress systems for a good night's sleep. InsideTracker.com, offering blood, DNA, and fitness tracking data all in one place. And Organifi, whole food organic superfood supplements and drink blends. And please visit the shopping page at bradkearns.com for my personal selection of favorite products for health, fitness, and peak performance with great discounts for listeners. Here we go with the show.
We tend to be, and this is part of that all or nothing thinking, I think, is we're afraid to do things wrong to the point where we don't do anything. You can't change other people's opinions, but you can look at your own belief system. And I always think the easiest way to ask yourself, or the easiest way to then take steps, is to say, is this belief still serving me? I kept coming back to my cardiologist saying, like, look, I'm not okay. I still have these crazy flutters. And he'd run all the tests and say, no, man, you're okay. Trust me, you're okay. And then he said, probably flippantly, he probably doesn't remember this, he said, you know what you need to do to prove to yourself that you're okay is run a marathon or something.
I want to tell you about Inside Tracker, an awesome new ultra-personalized nutrition and lifestyle program that combines data from your comprehensive blood panels, genetic test results, and lifestyle and fitness data from a Fitbit, for example, and organizes everything into one super cool online portal of your personal health. I am just getting going with this, and it's awesome. It has everything in one spot. For every blood result, you can click on a blog post or watch a video to learn more about these values. It's a great education in general health and self-quantification, and it was developed by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometric data from MIT, Tufts, and Harvard. The patented Inside Tracker algorithm calculates your so-called inner age, and it shows each biomarker as either optimized, needs to improve, or at risk. And then you can take precise corrective action with a science-backed plan to reach your performance goals. Oh, mercy, people. On my first round of testing, guess what my inner age was? 62! Shocker! Because I just turned 56. I'm sorry. You know what? When I delivered that blood test, I believe I was a little overtired, and several of my biomarkers were deemed to be subpar. So I made some changes as directed. I recovered better, rested, went back, and delivered way better numbers at the next blood test. The Inside Tracker motto is, change is an inside job, and that is for real. You got to keep tabs on this stuff to be at your best. And they have an amazing deal just for BRAD podcast listeners. They are going to give away a grand prize of $1,500 in Inside Tracker value. So to enter, all you have to do is go to insidetracker.com/BRADPOD, BRADPOD. Check it out right now at the link and enter the contest. Barack Armstrong is back for another appearance on the BRAD podcast. I love talking to this guy. He's so simple and sensible and gentle and kind and has such a wonderful approach to fitness, health, helping people lose weight. He's all over the place. He's had a wonderful career in the progressive fitness ancestral health scene. Because of his audio engineering expertise, he was actually the man behind many popular podcasts. So you can imagine mastering these shows over many, many years' time from some of the leading podcasts, like the Primal Blueprint podcast, like Katie Bowman's Move Your DNA work, Dave Asprey's Bulletproof podcast, the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show. He used to co-host the Q&A with Ben, and the Mark Divine Navy Seal podcast. So he's had a breadth of experience from some of the leaders and has built up such an incredible level of expertise and awareness himself, which he puts to work with his coaching clients. And he has a wonderful program that we talked about in the last show called Weigh Less And you can learn all about that at his new and improved website, brockarmstrong.com, because he's busting out on his own after co-hosting shows and doing a show for Scientific American. Now it's all about Brock and his continued progress toward being the most effective coach he can be. And one thing that's really interesting that we spent a lot of time on this show covering is his recent certification in cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. It's a popular form of therapy. He realized when he was doing all this work with weight loss enthusiasts and dispensing the proper diet and exercise information on his great videos and articles and podcast content, that there was another element here that was kind of missing. As Brock says, it turns out that if I make a bigger difference if I don't just give people a plan, but instead help them discover a plan of their own, because most people know what they need to do. They just need someone figuring out how to actually do it. So getting through those blocks, those negative behavior patterns, those program beliefs and behaviors that kind of sabotage your success when you're armed with the knowledge and the inspiration and motivation out of the gate. So I think you're going to really love this, a bit of a departure from the nuts and bolts of should we eat this food? Should we eat that food? What about this workout, which is mainly Brock's life's work? But now he has a beautiful overlay on this. A great show with Brock Armstrong. Here we go. Brock Armstrong, I gotcha. We are rocking and rolling.
I am here once again. Good to be here.
Listeners, we got to admit, we're warmed up because we just recorded a session for this amazing new podcast called Upgraded Fitness with Brock Armstrong. So I would love to kind of flow into what you're doing with the new podcast, how the idea came about, and especially the topics that you've been covering with Get Fit Guy and this kind of world that you're existing in where you're trying to seemingly broaden the discussion and kind of embrace a bigger population than the fitness freak who listens to Brock and Brad talk about marathon training and ultra marathon finish lines, you know. So let's hear about Upgraded Fitness.
Yeah, I mean, I've been biting my tongue like crazy because I know you are also probably glued to your laptop or your tablet or whatever, watching the Olympics right now. And yesterday was the race walkers, 50K race walker race, just under 4 hours. I could just talk about that all day, but we know now that this is not what, I mean, there is a niche audience. There's definitely a bunch of people out there who are nerds like us that would really get excited about talking about that kind of stuff. But I found for myself to serve my community and to really make a difference in people's fitness world and people's, what I like to say, their relationship with food and movement is much more accessible, much more low level than all of that stuff. And I can take everything that I've learned from being a ballet dancer, from being an endurance athlete, from lifting heavy, from doing crazy diets, jumping from keto, from high carb to keto, to back to high carb, to medium, to all those different things. Take all of that information and I can share all kinds of training programs. I can give everybody all of my advice on that. But at a certain point, without actually healing that relationship with food and movement, it's never sustainable and it never quite lands. It's just an endless series of going from one training program to another, one diet program to another, one meal plan to another, and nothing ever really becomes individualized. It never becomes internalized or sustainable. So with the Upgraded Fitness podcast and with my coaching these days, and I actually, like a lot of people during COVID, during lockdown, especially those early days when we really had no idea, like, can I actually leave the house? Is it okay to actually leave the house? Okay, it is. Wait, are you sure? I jumped online and got myself a cognitive behavior therapy practitioner's certification. Now, CBT or cognitive behavior therapy is something that played a huge role in my mental health life, like 20 some years ago. And I've been using what I learned as being a recipient of that therapy. And now I'm a practitioner and I've sort of it feels like I've brought all of this information together into one neat little package. And I'm really, I'm just excited to share it with people.
Gee, what does my mindset have to do with my diet and my exercise? That seems ridiculous. Yeah,
it does seem ridiculous, doesn't it?
So listeners, that was not a hypothetical when Brock was rolling through the checkpoints of being a ballet dancer, then an endurance athlete, then a big bodybuilder. So maybe kind of hit some highlights along that road as far as what were the major learning experiences and epiphanies that occurred in your own quest for fitness. And then I want to jump right back into the CBT and how the mindset and that type of training does in fact frame our experience as healthy eating and fitness pursuits.
Right. To make a long story short, because I don't want to bore everybody with my life story, but right out of high school was a professional ballet dancer. And this is in the 1980s. Like this is the tail end of the 1980s, but still back then. And we were doing our absolute best as a bunch of late teens, early 20s to be as strong, as durable, as capable, as flexible, as lean as possible without having any of the knowledge that I now have in terms of how our bodies actually work. So there was an awful lot of really dumb things that went on, like smoking instead of eating, drinking copious amounts of coffee instead of eating. In fact, I didn't do this, but there were people in the ballet school with me, so, and especially the female dancers, who were so desperate to be lean, they were doing things like shredding newspaper and putting ketchup on it and eating that because it would fill up their stomach. They wouldn't feel hungry, but wouldn't necessarily be having any useful calories. So a lot of really dumb things happened back then. And of course, I ended up injured, as most dancers do. And probably could have gone back to a dance career at some point once the injury had healed, but got distracted by various other things. And eventually became a desk worker, got the government job with the golden handcuffs and everything, and started putting on some weight, drinking a little more alcohol than I probably should have been, and eating out a little more. Was the biggest I ever was, and hopefully ever will be, in my adult life. And through even though I'm painting a very grim picture of my lifestyle, unrelated to my lifestyle, I got an infection in my pericardium, in my heart, and landed in the hospital, near-death experience, yada, yada, dead on the table, woke up with paddles on my chest, all that wonderful stuff.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that was song lyrics, if it is, or you're making it up. That's pretty cute.
I'm a song and dance man. What can I say?
Got the paddles on my chest.
Got the paddles on my chest.
I'm flying through the air. Here comes the spikes on the graph, and I'm okay. Yeah. Time to change my miserable golden handcuff life for Brock.
Exactly. Yeah. So luckily I did come out the other side of it with a clean bill of health. It was a year and a half of kind of misery in and out of like just not being able to exert myself in any way because my heart just couldn't handle it. So I just felt exhausted all the time.
Is that normal? Was that part of your recovery?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I had recurrent pericarditis, which meant that it just like it would sort of clear up a little bit, and then it would come back, and there wasn't really anything they could do about it. Just sort of let it run its course, unfortunately, and keep an eye on things. But I did eventually get the clean bill of health from my cardiologist, and in the meantime, I developed quite a generalized anxiety disorder around my health, which is quite common for people who have like heart attacks, strokes, cancer, any of those life-threatening kind of diseases, you end up with a generalized anxiety disorder, usually around your health. So I kept coming back to my cardiologist saying like, look, I'm not okay. I still have these crazy flutters. And he'd run all the tests and say, no, man, you're okay. Trust me, you're okay. And then he said, probably flippantly, he probably doesn't remember this. He said, you know what you need to do to prove to yourself that you're okay is run a marathon or something.
Oh.
And I went, in the back of my poor anxiety brain went, marathon equals feeling better? Okay, I'm sign up. So like later that day, I called my cousin who had done some marathons and said, hey, could you train me for a marathon? And he's like, sure, I can like give you the book that I used. And it was like the quintessential marathon training book. And I signed up for the marathon later that day and started training and decided that I was going to do everything in my possible in the world to try to prevent this kind of thing from ever happening again, which was misguided and definitely based in the anxiety response, because it wasn't anything within my control. That infection could have gone to my bladder, it could have gone to my nose, my ears, it could have gone anywhere, but it went to my heart just based on luck or being unlucky.
So are you saying the symptoms were real and you weren't just an anxiety freak, or were your complaints?
The symptoms I was feeling at that point weren't real anymore. They were part of anxiety. The anxiety, the way my therapist that I eventually worked with described it to me as, when you get into this sort of state, especially if you're recovering from a life-threatening thing like that, our security guards, our little policemen on our head are on guard for a very specific symptom, and they're on high alert all the time. So normal little things like a little heart flutter that we all have all the time and goes completely unnoticed becomes the focus of the entire day of, I had a heart flutter. So that was really what I was feeling. It wasn't that I didn't have things going on in my body. I was just on high alert and overreacting to them. And I carried that overreaction to do things like have a tattoo removed because I thought that was going to make me sick, and running a marathon instead of just and going completely vegan. Really, like I was eating huge pots of bean soup and stuff to make sure I didn't have any cholesterol in my in my body, and all of those. Now looking back, I know were misguided things to do, but in the moment, it seemed like it was the prudent thing to do to protect my health. But after that marathon, I was pretty hooked on the sport in a lot of ways, and moved into triathlon and then started doing some of the shorter races and just really enjoyed the challenge that it laid down. And at a certain point, I met people like you and Mark Sisson and Phil Maffetone and stuff, and started to realize that this isn't necessarily the healthiest way to live, but there are some healthier ways to do it. And yeah, then I got really excited about putting on as much muscle as I possibly could, being a lean endurance athlete and a lean ballet dancer, put on some muscle and enjoyed that for a while. And now I feel like I turned 50 3 days ago, and I'm sort of taking all the information I've learned from people like you, from Mark, from Dave Asprey, from Ben Greenfield, from all the people that I've had the luck, I guess, to have worked with and for and learned from, and really just putting it all into one neat little package of being someone in their 50s, or actually what I'm calling it is the second half of my first century on this planet, taking all of that information and just making myself as capable and durable and bulletproof as I can for the next half of this first century.
And listeners, this is the epicenter of health and fitness information, because Brock was a longtime podcast audio producer, and you were mixing with so many great people. Katie Bowman list too. I know you worked
Katie
with
Bowman,
Ben for a
Commander
long time.
Mark Devine.
Yeah,
Ben
Mark
Greenfield.
Devine. Yeah, love it. And so a lot of information's flown in and out of this brain and this headquarters in Vancouver, British Columbia. So, oh gosh, we could talk about so many things, but it is really fascinating how the mindset and your particular training plays such an important role. So when you're talking about, you know, pulling all your life experience together, let's talk about this new layer of the cognitive behavior therapy and maybe a quick overview of what that is if people aren't familiar with it, and then how we're gonna shoot that into our eating and fitness goals.
Yeah. Well, cognitive behavior theory or cognitive behavior therapy is really learning to identify our own the role that we play in our own emotions and our own reactions to things, learning to see those moments when maybe somebody pushed your buttons or you're reacting in a less than optimal way to something. And instead of wishing that the world would change, looking at yourself to figure out what can I do to change, or This is one of the things I'm embarrassed to say. I just heard about this, and I think it was because of Oprah, but asking the question instead of what's wrong with me, what happened to me? Because a lot of the things that, and I'm not talking about like severe trauma or something like that. Of course, that would play a role, but it can be everything from like, what shows did I grow up watching? What did my parents instill in me? What did I hear from my teachers at school when I was a kid? What did the church group say to me at some point that has influenced the way that I react to certain situations? So then I can look at those beliefs and see if they're still serving me. So really, you can probably start to see how you can apply that to things like exercise and diet, and because our society has shaped us and has turned us into people that think that exercise is punishment, food is reward, and that everything in between is just a balance of those two things. I ate too much, so I have to punish myself by exercising. I exercised a lot, I get to reward myself by eating a whole bunch. And it's, of course, more complicated than that. But those are sort of the basic beliefs that we've been indoctrinated into from such an early age.
Oh, very well described. And we hear so much these days about this concept of subconscious programming, which largely happens in childhood. Maybe my favorite characterization is from Dr. Bruce Lipton in his book, Biology of Belief, and how we're operating 93 to 98% of the time from subconscious programming that was programming from ages 0 to 7 in childhood. And so most everything we're doing is reactive or repeating the same tapes, the same thoughts. What do we repeat? Like 80% of yesterday's thoughts, and then 80% of these repeat thoughts are negative, or 90% are negative. Right. So I guess you've described CBT as a way of kind of dealing with this reality that we do have a lot of programming, and in the case of wanting to be a better person, the limiting beliefs that we want to address and uncover. And I think they talk about asking yourself, is this real? Am I really a lazy, no good person, or is it just a belief that's been thrown in, and can I challenge it and reframe it?
Yeah, the cognitive distortions that we tell ourselves, that things are the black and white thinking, or the crystal ball kind of thinking that we get involved in, like in the middle of the night, thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, a month from now. And it always is catastrophizing is another cognitive distortion, where everything is always going to head in the most negative way possible. Yeah, that's a lot of the challenging of your beliefs. Like, first of all, realizing that you do have beliefs and figuring out what those are, because a lot of the time we're just reacting and we think that the world is to blame because of it.
Yeah. And we have to drill down and figure out. What if it's other people's fault? Yeah. Not my beliefs. What are you talking about?
And changing your, believe me, like whether you believe it or not right now, changing your own beliefs is a lot easier than changing somebody else. you can probably imagine,
okay, fine.
Yeah. Coming out the other side of this pandemic at this point, trying to change anyone's beliefs around something as simple as like what we've, well, I guess it's not simple, but some of the more simple things that we've been asked to do during the pandemic, like you can't change other people's opinions, but you can look at your own belief system. And I always think the easiest way to ask yourself, or the easiest way to then take steps, is to say, is this belief still serving me? Because a lot of the beliefs, sure, they probably did serve you as a child, or they served you to please your parents or stay in line with your teachers at school or something like that. But at this point, are they still serving you? And most of the time, say, well, no, because it actually is, all it's doing is making me upset, or making me resentful, or making me choose the food that I'm trying to avoid, or making me avoid exercise that I should be choosing to do, and things like that. So asking yourself in those moments, or learning to identify those moments and say, okay, so my belief in this is leading me to react this way. How is that serving me? Is that serving me anymore? And then if the answer is no, which it quite often is, what can I put in place? What do I really believe about this situation?
That makes sense. I'm also thinking that we have a ton of beliefs that we would maybe analyze and say, these are serving me. I believe of myself to be a healthy, fit person who prioritizes healthy eating and good sleep. Okay, so we're not talking about that. We're talking about areas where we're struggling and feel like we're hitting our head against the wall. And so now when we transition to that, and you can keep all your beliefs, people, you can vote for whoever you want and think that you should wear a mask or not wear a mask, or a vaccination is silly, or it's mandatory and everyone else is disgraced. All that stuff is fine. And then when we kind of have the chance to sit down and examine those, what would you call them, self-limiting or destructive beliefs, that's when we can get some real work done. And I'm wondering, sometimes it's difficult to acknowledge that there's a belief there or a behavior pattern because we're so used to being reactive and blaming others.
Right. Right. And that's a lot of the time. And this is when I'm coaching people, I do group coaching through a program called Weigh Less. And we have hundreds of people in the program at a certain time. So, and once a month we get on a Zoom call and we all just sort of talk through the things that we're working on. And every day we go into our forum and pose questions to each other and stuff. And often the language that we use or the phrases that we use to describe ourselves, that can be real evidence into the way that we are deceiving ourselves. There's a lot of limiting, like you were saying, the limiting beliefs that we put forward in because we're talking about weight loss in Weigh Less tend to be things like people say things like, well, I'm completely powerless when chocolate is around, or I'm completely addicted to sugar, or I'm someone who can't resist this, or I always get injured when I do this. Those types of phrases, if you can learn to identify those phrases in yourself, or have somebody like me identify them for you, because I love to be
friendly,
like,
wait a second.
Yeah. Wait a second. What did you just say?
Yeah.
Is that really true? Like, do you really think that if chocolate is present, you can't actually control yourself? Like, you're not a rational human being that can actually do something else with that chocolate other than eat it? And I guess some people, maybe they can't, but I'm guessing the majority of people can do that. And by repeating that story to yourself over and over again, that you are somebody who can't control himself around chocolate, you know what that does?
Wires it in, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm also looking at our, our tendency to take pot shots or commiserate, and things like, negative comments about wealth or income disparity in society, and it's kind of maybe a way that we're holding ourselves back. If we abhor an ostentatious display of wealth, and there goes a Lamborghini down the street, and what a joke, that costs more than a house, and there's starving people in Africa, and things like that, that are kind of throwaway comments that are widely validated. Or, for example, like, oh, social media, it's so ridiculous how everyone's parading around in their bikinis on Instagram and using Photoshop and getting tanned and looking perfect, and isn't that superficial and ridiculous? And it's kind of a way to keep yourself locked in undesirable body composition, because boy, if you were to become an Instagram model and have your six pack showing, you'd be so superficial and vacuous.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of choosing sides that goes on, and the things that you're describing right now, like seeing, having an emotional reaction to somebody driving a car down the street, or having an emotional feeling like it's a personal attack that somebody is wearing a bikini on Instagram, is a real symptom that we have set ourselves up in society to be either right or wrong, or on the right side or on the wrong side. And again, like I know we've talked about the pandemic more than I'm comfortable with, because I'm no expert in this, but we've seen it played out in that as well, that you're either on the side of the maskers or you're wrong. And we tend to set ourselves up in these right or wrong situations, or taking sides in these situations. And when we have, like, the mask is a little more loaded, but as something as simple as, a flashy truck driving down the street, actually eliciting an emotional reaction from yourself, and you immediately write that person off as a jerk or a superficial, I can't remember the words you used, but like as a superficial individual, that is, we're definitely telling ourselves some stories there, and also engaging in a type of thought that is absolutely not productive in any sort of way. But again, that was some sort of belief that somebody exposed us to somewhere. We got told, we got the belief from somewhere that those kinds of people were this way, and therefore we're carrying it forward and we're allowing it to affect our happiness well beyond its useful time, if it ever was a useful thought to have. So yeah, I mean, we're straying quite far from the idea of fitness and wellness and stuff now, but it all really does circle together. It really is all interconnected with the way that we talk about other people, the way that we talk about ourselves. It's all rooted in that belief system that tends to just operate very surreptitiously under the surface that we're not aware of. But it does control the decisions that we're making for ourselves and in my particular world for fitness and wellness, but in your world too.
So maybe we could talk about some of the common patterns, such as someone heading out the gate with great enthusiasm and energy, with a fitness program in mind, and then they fail to adhere at some point. And what do you see as some of those ways that we get in our own way? And we can't keep it going, and we kind of fall off.
Well, I think one of the biggest things that I find that I work against or work with in the fitness and wellness area is the all or nothing thinking. Uh-huh. Like, we definitely tend to have this feeling that we either need to be hitting the CrossFit gym. I feel bad. We've been picking on CrossFit in the last few episodes of my show anyway. But either we're going to, let's say, yoga 6 days a week or 5 days a week, or we're doing our marathon training program, or we're doing another thing that is very prescribed, usually has some branding around it, usually costs some money, involves some sort of location or some sort of gear or something. We're either doing that or we're doing nothing. And if we happen to fall off of that one thing that we're doing, then we go back to the nothing. There doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground. Like, either we're eating keto or we're eating all the carbs, or we're like, it's just a very black and white, all or nothing kind of thinking that we have, where I love that people like BJ Fogg and the Atomic Habits fellow.
Clear.
James Clear, yes. I love that these books are getting a lot more prominence these days, where smaller incremental changes are actually becoming a little more in fashion to do, rather than that all or nothing thinking that we've been seeing for so long now. But it really is still very much
it's in vogue. Black and white. Black and white are still fashionable. So how is that serving us? Why is it so common? It seems silly. I mean, black and white thinking is ridiculous, but it's so common. So what's going on there, especially as it relates to healthy eating and fitness?
Let's talk about nootropics. These are supplements designed to improve cognitive function, memory, and creativity. And I'm taking three products from a company called NU Optimal. The products are MetaFocus, which promotes flow state and improves processing speed and mental clarity. It contains ingredients like phenylalanine, B12, ginkgo biloba. I'm taking MetaMemory, which is good for memory retention, verbal fluency, reduced oxidative stress, very important for the brain. This product has things like lion's mane, pine bark, and bacopa. And I'm taking MetaDrive for motivation, stress resilience. It's got a little boost of caffeine in there, ashwagandha, rhodiola. They're wonderful products with a lot of scientific detail and easy to understand information on their website. So you get the big picture of what these products are all about, not just stuffing pills down your face, but how to do the stack, as they call it, strategically. You get a 16-page booklet that'll guide you to optimal use when you purchase. And guess what? 60-day money-back guarantee and 30% discount from me. Listen, I'm not a coffee guy. I'm not a drug guy, but I'm always looking for any type of natural edge I can get, especially for cognition. So guess what? Let's avoid that sugary junk food. Let's get enough sleep, take a power nap when you need one, and consider trying some nootropics to see if you get a natural brain boost. So go visit newoptimal.com, N-U-O-P-T-I-M-A-L, and enter the code BRAD30 to get 30% discount when you try it. newoptimal.com for way more details.
I think a lot of it comes from the fact that we are drawn to extremes. Like as humans, we want to be doing everything or we're lost. Like we want to be speeding down the street or staying home. And I honestly don't know where this desire comes from that extremes sell. Like the more extreme the solution, the easier it is to convince people to do it. In fact, the Wayless program, which is very non-extreme, we approached a book publisher to have it published as a book. And after they reviewed all of our literature and stuff, they came back to us and said, "This won't sell. It's too reasonable."
Oh my gosh. What a great banner headline for your website. I love it.
They didn't say this won't work, it's too reasonable. They said this won't sell, it's too reasonable. Mm-hmm. And I think that really does sort of cut to the whole idea that it's got to be big, it's got to be flashy, it's got to be a huge change. We really don't get excited for things that are just reasonable.
Hmm.
Does that make sense? I don't know where that default came from. I would love to be that level of psychologist to be able to understand that. I just know it exists.
It's
not serving us.
It's like self-defeating out of the gate. You're black and white thinking, you're going all or nothing, and deep down you know it's not sustainable or it's beyond your capabilities. And so you're going to fail. You're setting yourself up for failure. And that's something that's been programmed in you, that you have fallen short in 17 different ways in your life to date. And now you're going to make darn sure to repeat the same pattern. And we have a lot of scientific support for that. And the psychologists contend that we lock into these patterns. And so we got to make the goal slightly too difficult and too daunting so that we'll once again fail and confirm our belief systems. Is it possible? I'm speculating. I've heard
now some. We love to prove ourselves right.
Yeah, right.
Whether it's in our benefit or not. And it certainly isn't in the way that you're framing it. But it's true.
So when you get a client that you're observing engaging in these behavior patterns or speech patterns, what is the gentle and effective way to help recalibrate rather than calling people out in a large Zoom meeting group saying, "Oh, there you go with your self-limiting beliefs, you loser. Come on." There's got to be a way to kind of help people out of this, because it is difficult to extricate yourself.
Yeah, luckily those people who are on the Zoom call are there for a very specific reason. I'm not just calling them out in an office meeting or a board meeting or something. We're all there for a common goal.
It's a safe environment.
So many people are there for the same reasons that when we do dig into somebody's story, it usually resonates with the other people. But we often need to ignore the symptom and find what's actually underlying the real problem. Like the question that people usually come to me with isn't the question they want answered. They don't know this, but they tend to ask a question that's like, "Why can't I resist sugar?" Well, so you feel like you can't resist sugar. Can you give me an example of this? I said, I'm at work and I'm going through the morning really well, and I eat my healthy lunch, and by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm so exhausted and angry that I just have to have chocolate and I end up eating like three chocolate bars and then get a Coke on the way home. And like, wait a second, what did you say? I'm so exhausted and upset that I have to have this sugar. So the question isn't, why can't I resist sugar? It's, why are you exhausted and upset in the afternoon? The actual playing out of the habitual behavior isn't usually what needs to be solved. What needs to be solved is what is causing the situation that leads to you enacting this habitual behavior that is unwanted. So in this case, the eating of the chocolate bars and buying a 2-liter pop on the way home. Sure, we could look at taking some supplements and things to mitigate your desire for sugar, or have that, there's a plant you can put in your mouth that makes sugar taste bitter so you don't do that. But that's not addressing the problem, which was, in their statement, they said that they were exhausted and defeated or exhausted and upset in the afternoon. If we remove that, if we can figure out what's causing that, then we don't even have to worry about the sugar. The sugar will take care of itself.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So I think the question isn't how to eliminate the all or nothing thinking. It's to get further upstream, I guess, from it, and to take a bigger look and see what is the situation that is causing this behavior to manifest itself.
Oh my gosh. I could see that applying to many different areas. Like, I'm easily distracted by YouTube videos of high jumpers when I'm trying to focus and get work done. And well, wait a second.
You could put a block in YouTube that says Brad's not allowed to watch high jump things.
The statement implies that I have an internet connection readily available to pop over at the click of a button. So I think creating a successful environment kind of flows nicely, into the next step of, let's say, the imaginary client coaching experience here. We're trying to improve our diet, improve our exercise, and get out of our own way and get our mindset right. But part of that mindset getting right is having, a kettlebell within your visual field when you're working at home all day.
Well, sure. But in that particular situation, I don't know if this is a hypothetical situation or not for Brad getting distracted by watching
high jump video guides. Completely hypothetical. Yeah.
I would say, well, in which situation, like, what are you doing right before you start watching those high jumping videos? Like, what's the activity that you're engaged in?
Brad's getting processed on his own show. Okay.
There's no better way to do an example.
That is correct, people. I am game. Here we go. Right. So is it, lack of taking appropriate breaks at opportune times every 20 minutes to keep my cognitive function sharp and keep my body energized?
Let's stay more high level, more specifically. Like, what should you be working on when you're watching the high jump videos?
Oh, excellent question. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to say it's the most cognitively challenging tasks are the ones that I like to jump out of with abandon. So it's like writing a book is probably the hardest thing that I do. Mm-hmm. I can certainly fire off emails, no problem, while the video's running, on the other side. I mean, so that's my answer, is that when the going gets tough, Brad goes to YouTube.
Okay, so why do you want to be doing those cognitively difficult tasks, like writing a book? Like, what is your motivation to write the book?
Well, yeah. So the sense of satisfaction and accomplishment and all those wonderful things flow from putting yourself into challenging situations and persevering. And that's the process of meaning, living a rich and meaningful life. And Dr. Lustig talks about this in his book, Hacking of the American Mind. You know, we have the serotonin receptors, which are happiness, contentment, fulfillment, all these great things that give us a rich and meaningful life. And then we have the dopamine receptors, which are at war with the serotonin receptors. We routinely flood the dopamine receptors with all manner of indulgence and instant gratification in modern life, to the extent that we crowd out our ability to persevere through daunting challenges and struggle over a manuscript. When why would I do that when I have a chance to see Tim Berry and Barshim sharing the gold medal in one of the greatest moments in Olympic history?
But why do you think it's important to write this book?
I guess, you know, there's that wonderful part of me that has high values and ideals and wants to make a difference and make a contribution to the world instead of just being a dilettante who has, you know, a high competency with watching YouTube videos.
But can you see, like, we could keep going like this. I don't think we've hit the crux yet, but we call it the five whys. Like, this is just one of the exercises that you can do.
Well, what am I at? Four? Are you going to give me two more? And three?
We could, but I think we can get into some really personal stuff when we get into those. And that is the point of it being five, because usually the first two or three whys are very like, well, like, okay, why do you want to lose weight is a really common one. Like, I'm having a lot of trouble. I'm eating snacks and like, oh, well, why don't you want to eat snacks? Well, because I'm trying to lose weight. Okay. Well, why do you want to lose weight? Well, because I'll look better. Well, why is looking better important to you? Well, because it'll help my self-esteem and stuff. Well, why is that important to you? What's important about your self-esteem? Well, when I was a kid, I was ridiculed. And then it gets very personal and gets really specific to the point where then we can say, okay, so in those moments when you are about to look at a high jump video, you know what's going on. You know what the issue is, or what the root of the behavior that you're about to elicit is. And often that can be enough to shut it down, or we get to the bottom of it and you don't know why. You don't know why you're writing that book. And so being distracted is super duper easy because you don't really care at your root. The book is not important enough to you. Watching high jump videos is much more engaging and exciting. And sure, you can get into all the dopamine and serotonin and all that kind of stuff, but that's completely irrelevant if your drive to do something is true and sustainable and stuff. Then you won't experience those kinds of things, or you can at least defeat them a little bit easier. But often we get to the bottom of things and realize, well, you actually don't want to lose weight. You want to heal your relationship with a parent, or you want to do something different that has manifested a belief that society has somehow said is going to fill that void instead of actually addressing what the real problem is. So sometimes we write books because we want to feel validated, not because we really think that our message is so vastly wonderful and amazing that I need to share it with the world. And so it's a lot easier to get distracted or to engage in sort of coping behaviors or numbing behaviors. Whew. Instead of actually doing the work.
That's heavy, man. I love it.
It is, but it's really fun when you learn how to do it to yourself.
Yeah.
Just taking those moments and going, wait a second, that was a really weird thing. Why did I just do that? Okay, what am I working on? What's going on? And you can ask yourself the five whys sometimes and go, holy shit, you know what? I don't care about this at all. Why am I doing this? And sometimes we can't make that change immediately because it's how we pay our bills or whatever. Like when I realized that working at the liquor store was not something I wanted to do with my life, which seems obvious now, but when I was able to do those moments of, wait a second, I'm getting really upset about this job. Do I really care about this job? And when the answer is no, the freedom that comes over you is really profound. And then even if you stay, even if you choose to stay in that situation, even if you choose to persevere and write the book, even once you've realized that maybe the idea that you had initially was something a lot more seemingly meaningful, and it actually you uncovered that it's a lot more ego-based or something, that's okay. You can still continue to do it. Yeah. But once you've discovered that truth, it just becomes a lot more freeing. Like, you've got a much more realistic way of looking at what you're doing, and we can just be happier and a little more stress-free, I suppose, in some ways. So it's not always about changing your life, I guess, is the thing. It's just about changing your belief.
Right. Accepting what have you. So with this example of wanting to get in shape, I think most people genuinely, sincerely want to drop their excess body fat, get fitter, and actually reach that stated goal. But when it's not happening, and when, you know, these self-destructive patterns reveal, so now I'm watching YouTube videos instead of going out and working out on my own on my own high jump. And if I go through five whys and all five of them are like, yes, I really want to do this. And I don't understand why it's not working well for me. Is there another, does Brock have an answer when we really and truly, and in my example, you know, I really and truly want to get this book done. I feel like I have a lot to offer. I have what I think are strong and, you know, intrinsic motivation, nothing superficial or ego driven, but it feels like my purpose, my calling. It's very rewarding. I've been doing it for a long time, but I'm still stuck at suboptimal. Then where do I go?
Yeah. Well, that's what you've described happens an awful lot. And sometimes what it ends up coming down to is like, I want to get fit. Why do you want to get fit? Well, I want to like extend my life. I want to be healthier. Well, why do you want to do that? Well, because I want to be around for my grandchildren, to play with my grandchildren and stuff. And it's like, okay, well, this is all really good stuff. So what are you doing to get fit then? Well, I downloaded this marathon training program. Well, do you like to run? No. Okay, let's start there. If you often we choose a fitness program or a diet or a way of life or a job or a partner or something based on beliefs that again are out of date or don't belong to us or are societal. So we're actually it's our choice that we're the reason we're failing at doing the thing that we chose to do isn't to do with the whys necessarily in this case, it's to do with you chose the wrong one. So like the marathon, I blow minds all the time. I don't know if you've experienced this as a coach too, when people say, like, I don't know why I can't stick to my marathon training program or something, or I really want to get fit and I go run for 3 days and then I just don't want to do it anymore. And I say, well, do you like running? I said, no, I really don't. And say, okay, well, don't run then. And people are like, what? What do you mean I don't have to run? I want to get fit. I'm like, there are so many other things to do. Like, let's look at the vast array of other things that can improve your fitness that don't involve running. Because making yourself do something that you don't enjoy is not sustainable, and that's not going to work for you. So let's look at, like, first make a list of things you do enjoy doing that involve moving your body physically, and let's choose some activities that you actually look forward to and enjoy participating in, or at least enjoy the feeling you get when you're finished, like that satisfaction or the strong feeling that you get after you finish the workout, because then you're a lot more likely to carry that out. So yeah, if the whys don't play out, if they do play out to be very, you're acting in line with your greater self or your vision of your greater self, then the problem isn't that. The problem is that you're making some wrong choices, or you've just picked the wrong thing.
Wow. Right. So I mean, it's kind of like being strong with your word and your intention. Choose your goals very carefully, because if you throw down a stated goal, you better mean it and you better execute.
Well, and also being a lot of this comes down to curiosity and being willing to experiment on yourself. So if you can maintain a level of curiosity, not only can you look at your own beliefs and question them and find some clarity with that, but being willing to try something and fail, try something and be like, okay, well, no, I didn't really like that. Let's try something else. We tend to be, and this is part of that all or nothing thinking, I think, is we're afraid to do things wrong to the point where we don't do anything. And being able to actually accept the fact that, well, you know what, I'm gonna try Zumba. Let's see. Like, maybe I'll love it, maybe I'll hate it, but I'm gonna give it a try. Or I'm gonna try training for a triathlon. Or I'm gonna try gardening for the first time. There's the sense of curiosity and the playfulness that can come from that can be so much more fulfilling. We can find the things that actually align with our greater goals and with our greater vision of ourselves if we're just willing to give things a try, instead of being like, okay, I need to get fit, so I get a gym membership. Like, there's a lot of societal prescriptions that hardly fit anybody. It's not only that they don't fit like these people that I'm coaching, it doesn't really fit anybody. There's a certain amount of the population that can force themselves into that mold and eventually find some pleasure from it. But and our mutual friend Daryl Edwards, the fitness explorer, he always says, like, people weren't meant to exercise. Like there's nothing about us that like exercising is a very, very modern construct. Mm. And so we're not predisposed to do that. We are predisposed to enjoy moving our bodies and challenge ourselves and do all the wonderful things that our bodies are capable of. But exercise in and of itself is a very modern construct, and we're not genetically defined to do that sort of thing. So keeping that in mind and just looking for ways to actually, like Katie Bowman, our friend biomechanist Katie Bowman is a great advocate of that, just finding ways to do stuff in the garden that uses your body in unique ways. She just released a video about walking downhill and how to walk downhill, and it blew my mind. Like, I haven't been using my hips walking downhill. What the heck? That's amazing. And we can find much more pleasure if we have that curiosity and lose the fear of failure. Mm. And I'm sure you get this the same way that I have, and I've watched people get this in the past, that we get questions as podcasters, like, what is the perfect way to do this? And like, okay, well, what are you doing right now? Well, nothing. What's the perfect way to do this? And like, there is no perfect way to do this. Come on. Do something is better than doing nothing.
Yeah. And not obsessing too much about the details. I think I get some wonderful, incredibly thoughtful, intelligent questions. But they're so nuanced that, you know, I could give a flippant answer easily and say, just quit eating junk food. And we don't have to talk about the macronutrient ratios and your carbohydrate count keeping under 50 grams or whatever. And same with training. Oh my goodness, the ability with all these wearable devices, which, you know, my triathlon career predates all this stuff. Yeah. And so we had a speedometer told us how far we went and how many miles per hour. And thankfully we had heart rate monitors, and I still don't see the need for anything beyond monitoring your training heart rate and then getting a good night's sleep and then assessing. Kelly Starrett calls it this metric readiness to train. And it was measured, I think, with science from the Olympic Training Center and, you know, the very cutting edge of athletic peak performance, where they're testing blood lactate levels and heart rate variability. But readiness to train trumps all of them in terms of accuracy and effectiveness for the athlete to make training decisions. And so if you don't feel like it one day, or you feel a little heavy in the legs in the first 8 minutes of your warm-up before you're intending to do a sprint workout, that is the gold standard of saying, yeah, maybe I better take it easy today.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I've shown up at gone all the way to the pool, changed into my clothes, done one lap or one length and been like, nope, going home.
Oh my goodness. It takes so long to get to that point. And I remember just starting with, you know, running in high school, and we were running ourselves into the ground, and it was so challenging, and going into college and getting injured frequently, and then into the triathlon scene where the training load is so heavy. And my dad was a big help. He was a physician, and I'd have a sore throat or get a little sniffle going, and he'd say, 2 weeks. That's how long it takes for a cold to run through your body, 2 weeks. I'm like, no, I'll just rest for, you know, a couple of days, and then I'll be fine on the weekend. And I'd go back and look at my training logs, and you would see these patterns of the workout reports for a good 2 weeks, even if you had the slightest little sniffle or sore throat, and everything was thrown upside down. And finally, you'd finish coughing and you'd feel 100% around 2 weeks after a cold. So I finally got smart and realized that when I had the slightest tickle of a sore throat or that slight hot feeling in the head, I would shut down everything and basically go back to sleep when I was in my triathlon scene, but, you know, do the best I can to tone things down in modern times. And in fact, in a couple few days, as a healthy athletic person, your immune system can go to work. I like to engage in fasting at these times also, and I'll come back a day or two later and feel fine. But if you allow that cold to take hold and run its course, you are looking at 2 weeks. The first week is an obvious down period where you shouldn't be exercising. And then the second week, you're still coughing, you're still slightly off, but the trade-off of taking 1 or 2 days off versus dragging along for 2 weeks is you know, it takes a lot to get into a thick head to make that good decision, like you describe at the pool, turning around. Where are you going, Brock? You're supposed to be in our lane. You know, there's a lot of voices and pressures outside compelling you to keep going and you know, torturing yourself.
Yeah, when are you going to make up that workout? And the same thing with injuries, too. Like when I was in basically my career-ending injury in the ballet came as a result of being too pig-headed to acknowledge the fact that I had a small injury in my foot, turned out to be a stress fracture, but it probably wasn't at the beginning. It was just some pulled ligaments or something in my foot. But I kept dancing, kept performing, kept going to rehearsal and stuff to the point where I know I can see it in my head still. The way I was using my foot was so biomechanically incorrect because I was avoiding the part of my foot that was in quite extreme pain at that point. So I was using my foot in a very strange way to avoid putting pressure on my metatarsal, which was putting stress on my knee, which was putting stress on my hip, and my hip eventually dislocated.
Ooh.
And that was the end. That was basically the end of my career at that point. Sure, I probably could have come back a year or so. Well, I could have maybe in a few months, but at that point, things had sort of accumulated and I didn't bother coming back. But had I felt that slight sore throat or the hotness in my head, like you were describing in my foot, and said, okay, you know what? I just need a couple of days to ice this, give it some rest, elevate it. And back in those days, it was all about rice, mm-hmm. rest, ice, compression, elevation. If I had done that for a couple of days, I probably would have had a much longer career and dance, but instead ignored it, pushed through until it became a really full-blown injury. And yeah, that was the end of that.
Well, I'd tease you if I didn't have a similar story myself. And so many athletes have the same experience. I mean, a stress fracture is the classic example of the Idiot of the Year award because you have so much advance warning. And I remember when I was...
months probably.
Yeah. I mean, workout after workout, I remember running on the college team. And of course, you don't want to miss a workout because you want to get picked for the traveling squad. And I was getting this hot spot in my shin. That's the term for, or they call it a stress reaction now when the NBA player has it. But, you know, it'd be a tight single spot that would kind of burn and get worse and worse. And on the last workout that I did before my season ending stress fracture became too much, I lived a quarter mile away from the track in the dorms. And I had to actually limp to the track because the pain was so bad. And I got to the track and I told the coach, yeah, my leg's feeling, you know, a little rough today. I had to limp to the start of the workout. And he said, oh, just go run some strides on the grass and, you know, warm up gradually, not go to the health center for a bone scan immediately. Yeah. That wasn't, you know, part of the realm. And it probably still is, you know, disgracefully not recognized when athletes are heading over the edge of the cliff. But that was the end for me, was limping over to do one more workout. And of course, you know, then it was too much. But if we can all kind of, you know, kind of rein it in a little bit, use that intuition a little better, boy, that opens you up to ultimately to peak performance. It's not the consistency of not missing a workout or pushing hard every time out, but, you know, being a little more nuanced there.
Right. Yeah. You see it all the time at the towing the line at a marathon or a half marathon or something. You see all these runners out there with the huge knee braces on or ankle braces and stuff.
Kinesio tape all over their body. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about the elites. Yeah. I'm not talking about the pros. I'm talking about people back in the 5-hour corrals and kind of want to do the five whys on them. It's like, why are you racing this? Why are you doing this race? And usually it probably comes down to what you were talking about earlier, where it's like, well, I paid my money. I don't want to miss out on this.
Yeah.
My family traveled with me to Chicago to do this race. I'm doing it.
We're stuck in patterns. Okay, so the five whys entails addressing an issue and then asking another follow-up and another follow-up to dig as deep as possible, kind of like you did with me.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, so that's it's a nice little tool that you can actually use on yourself. And sometimes it's actually easier to use on yourself because, like I said, you do get pretty real sometimes when you get down to the fourth and fifth and maybe sixth. It can take more than five to really get to it. But it's people should give it a try on yourself, listener out there, and see what you see what you unearth about yourself.
Pick a topic, any topic. Here we go.
Why am I drinking this ice cold coffee sitting on my desk?
Because we've been podcasting for a while. But before I let you go, I got to put you on the spot, Brock, and ask you for some upgraded nuggets. First, describe what those are, and then lay it on me.
All right. Well, in my podcast, Upgraded Fitness, I've started asking everybody at the end of the interviews to give me three upfit nuggets.
Upfit nuggets. Upgraded. Excuse me.
Yeah. Because they're upgraded fitness. So it's already taken on a world of its own. Upfit is the shorthand for the podcast. But and this can be anything. It started out, I was going to ask for people's workouts, their favorite workouts, and immediately got pushback from my very first guest, who's a mindset guy. And he said, well, I'm not going to give you my workouts, but I'm going to give you my mindsets. Mm. I was like, oh, that's so much better.
Okay.
So basically they're just things like the top three things that I would want people to walk away from this conversation with, I guess. So I guess the first one would be that you have beliefs always. All of us have beliefs that are circulating in our heads, whether aware of them or not, that are informing the way that we react to situations, which can play themselves out in participating in a habitual behavior that isn't the one that we want to be exhibiting. So, I mean, but I guess like snacking or avoiding your exercises, your fitness programs and things like that. So don't feel like anything is broken inside you. You're not broken. Your genes aren't bad. You're not a bad person. You just have some bad programming as the way that I'm a computer guy. So I like to think about it in terms of your software is just it needs an update. So by finding out what belief it is that you're holding that's leading down this path, you can often just take care of the problem by changing your belief and just be a happier person. And one of the great tools, this is number two, one of the great tools to find that out is to ask yourself why you're doing something, why you believe that this is something that is worthwhile doing. And usually you can get some pretty real feelings and either understand that yes, this is a thing that you want to do, and it is something that aligns with your greater values. But quite often we realize that this is something that somebody told us we should want to do rather than something that we told ourselves that we do want to do. And I guess number three would be to not be a stupid idiot. And when you have an injury or an illness, to listen to your body. Your body knows best, and you can often save yourself an awful lot of pain and suffering by just take a day off. It's not that bad. Your body will be happy for it. I'm going to take today off because I've been podcasting since 8 o'clock this morning, and I like to work out in the morning. But I'm going to go for a walk later instead. That'll be good enough because I've put enough stress on my central nervous system today.
Big finish. Love it, Brock. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Brock Armstrong from the Upgraded Fitness Podcast. Where else should we check in with you besides downloading that podcast?
I think the best place to go is brockarmstrong.com.
Oh, yeah, the slick new website. Oh, yeah.
It's slickish. Thank you. I'm glad you think it's slick. But yeah, it's got all the links to like my Scientific American articles, my old Get Fit Guy podcast, all the stuff can be found there. All my workout of the week videos as well, where I demonstrate my warm-up routine. I know Brad's got his warm-up routine. I've taken some nuggets out of your warm-up routine and started using them in mine as well. I need to do a new video though. I like that you have your old version and your new version up there.
I like watching you in the Canadian forest standing on a random log and showing how you can get a whole workout just in the middle of nowhere for all the naysayers that my gym's closed during COVID. I can't get in shape. Go look at Brock's videos. You can happen anytime, any place.
Bicep curls on the beach.
There you go.
In the snow, actually. That was a special one.
Thanks for listening, right, everybody. Thanks, Brock.
Thanks, Brad.
That's a wrap.
Hey, folks, how about a non-drinker telling you what kind of alcohol you should drink? That's right. It's pseudo-sommelier Brad Kearns here to recommend dry farm wines. Why? Because if you choose to drink, I want you to be healthy and make a superior choice to the mainstream commercial wines. Listen to my podcast with Dry Farm Wines founder Todd White. The insights were astonishing, especially that most all commercial wines are loaded with dozens of chemicals that the FDA allows in your wine but don't have to be listed on the label. And the sugar, oh my goodness, the sugar levels can be as much or more per liter than Coca-Cola, but difficult to taste due to the acidity in the wine. Dry Farm Wines is a membership club where you're shipped hand-picked wines from old-world family-run vineyards in France, Italy, Greece, and Sicily. These wines come from non-irrigated vineyards hundreds of years old that deliver a tastier, higher antioxidant grape, and they're independent lab certified to be completely free from chemical additives and naturally 100% sugar-free. That's right, the sugar was allowed to ferment out instead of be arrested by chemical intervention in the name of pleasing the average consumer palate that has a sweet tooth. The Dry Farm Wines Club has taken off like crazy because ancestral and keto enthusiasts, people who care about their health, appreciate a sugar-free wine. You'll enjoy the variety, the taste, and the pleasant sensation in the aftermath of burning through the alcohol buzz and going on with your life without a hangover. So if you care about your carb intake and your overall health, Dry Farm Wines has a special promotion for podcast listeners. Get your first bottle for a penny when you enroll at dryfarmwines.com/Brad or click on the Dry Farm Wines at the bradkearns.com shopping page. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the show. I love sharing the experience with you and greatly appreciate your support. Please email podcast@bradventures.com with feedback, suggestions, and questions for the Q&A shows. Subscribe to our email list at bradkearns.com for a weekly blast about the published episodes and a wonderful bi-monthly newsletter edition with informative articles and practical tips for all aspects of healthy living. You can also download several awesome free ebooks when you subscribe to the email list. And if you could go to the trouble to leave a 5 or 5-star review with Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to the shows, that would be super incredibly awesome. It helps raise the profile of the BRAD podcast and attract new listeners. And did you know that you can share a show with a friend or loved one by just hitting a few buttons in your player and firing off a text message? My awesome podcast player called Overcast allows you to actually record a soundbite excerpt from the episode you're listening to and fire it off with a quick text message. Thank you so much for spreading the word. And remember, be rad.